You want to achieve great things? You want to reach the next level? Well, so does every other entrepreneur. You know what that means? You have to take every competitive advantage possible. Welcome to Let's Talk Business, the show where we're going to show you how to create this competitive advantage by being more productive and sharing the secrets of the world's top performers. I'm your host, Kenny Aronson, and I think it's time to get down to business. Self-development is one of the central themes for the Da Vinci Mindset podcast. Many of the guests that I've had on this show are centered in self-development. They've spent years going through the process, growing and learning, and every single guest that I bring you has a very powerful, a vast library of knowledge to bring you guys. And today, that's no different. Today, I'm very excited to bring you my new friend, Sheila Wall. Sheila is an expert in self-development and music therapy. So I'm very, very excited to talk about these topics with her today so we can see how much value that we can provide you guys. So without any further ado, let's welcome Sheila to the show. Hey, Sheila, how are you doing?
I'm doing very fine.
That is great to hear. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and I look forward to speaking with you today. So I appreciate you coming on the interview with me today.
I'm very honored to be here. Thank you, Kenny.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. So Sheila, I like to just keep my show kind of easygoing and natural, and I always start it the same way, just so the audience can get to know you a little better. So Sheila, why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to in the world?
Well, I am a board certified music therapist, and I have been board certified since probably before you were born. I was in college in the late 80s and spent the last, almost 30 years, 30 plus years working in the long-term care industry. And then I spent the last 10 years or so in the insurance world as an agent, and went back into the music therapy program, or in the music therapy business, about a year ago. So I've been working for the last 10 years or so on personal development in order to really look at who I am and where I belong in the world, because of the crash in 2008 really took the wind out of my sails, and everything I spent 20 years or 25 years building crashed to the ground. So I had to figure out what to do from there. And the last 10 years or so, I have been working on becoming a better person and working on deciding what the best business model for my life would be, as well as for my businesses that I'm running. So it's very exciting. And it's very, very exciting.
That sounds very exciting. And you've certainly been through a lot. And we're definitely going to talk about these things throughout the show. The main topics we're going to talk about are music therapy and self-development. And I figured that in the first half of the show, we're probably going to focus on music therapy. And then in the second half, we'll focus on self-development. So why don't you just start by explaining what exactly music therapy is?
Well, I like to tell my customers in the layman's terms, the easiest way to say is I am a therapist that uses music as a tool to bring about your changes that you would like to see happening in your life. So when I'm dealing with children, we're looking at developmental milestones to enhance those using music. When we're talking about teens, many times we're dealing with trauma and dealing with self-esteem, self-image, those kinds of things that we work through. When we're looking at young adults, they're looking at who they are now. What do? We transition from being a child to being an adult. What does that look like? And when I deal with middle-aged folks, we talk about life changes and how we work through those processes, whether we want to be physically fit using music, or whether we want to be mentally more alert and more adept, or we want to have new skills that we need to develop, those kinds of things, as well as self-esteem. When we deal with the elderly population, we work with music is the life ring, and I'm sure that you've seen in many YouTube videos and whatever where the person will put their headphones on and they'll go from being a catatonic sitting in the wheelchair with head down to wide awake and alert and able to hold on to a conversation. When a person wonders why that happens, the unique characteristic that music has is that it engages the entire brain. So when music is played, whether you like it or not, whether you particularly pay attention to it or not, the entire brain engages. And so when the brain wants to have, it wants to compensate for any problems, it wants to heal, it wants to be happy. The brain's goal in our lifetime is to keep you safe and keep you nourished and keep you happy and keep you healthy. And whatever that means. So if you're blind, your ears get better. If you're deaf, your eyes get better. Or if your left leg hurts, your right leg compensates. Or if your right hand is sore, your left hand compensates. And the same thing in the brain. When your brain is traumatized, it's working so very hard to compensate. And it struggles seeing neural pathways to become better, or to be able to compensate for these damaged neural pathways. So when you are able to engage the entire brain, it lights up. They see each other. The brain is able to finally find a new pathway, and it becomes the life ring. So it's able to focus better. Now, with today's technology, they're finally able to see without cutting the brain open. They're finally able to see what is actually going on in the neural pathways when music is played. And it's been known for centuries and centuries since the beginning of time, we were created as musical beings. So music has been known to be healing in many, many, you talk about the medicine men and the shaman and the going all the way back into Bible times and prehistoric times. Music and rhythm and pitches and beats and those kinds of things have been used throughout history to therapeutically interact with the human body. And because we used to view it in our culture as a social medium, we don't realize the medicinal qualities, or we don't realize the damaging qualities that music can also provide. Because when a person is constantly listening to chaotic music, the brain becomes chaotic. If a person listens to music that is more organized and more orderly, then the brain is able to become more organized and more orderly. And I always like to say that music is alive. Even though it's not a breathing person, it is alive because it interacts with the emotions, it interacts with the mind, it interacts with your body. It is alive, and we must be mindful of what we're using for music. It's very interesting to see the responses in the people. I really, really have, every single time I have a session, every single session, even though it's been 20 plus years that I've been a therapist, using this music as a tool, it always surprises me. There's something about each and every session. I had an 11-year-old boy that could not figure out how to write. His eyes, he struggles with vision. He struggles a little bit with balance. He has a little bit of autistic characteristics, but he's not, it's not seriously involved. But his mother was concerned because he couldn't recreate. He couldn't without her help, and he couldn't write. And so our time together, he said he wanted to be a professional piano player. He said, if I work really hard, do you think I could be a professional piano player? Because I don't want my mama to have to work so hard forever. And that broke my heart. I thought, oh, dear. And he goes, I want to be able to read music like everyone else. Well, he can't because his vision is impaired. Well, with today's technology, my good friend YouTube has had a wonderful teacher that was able to help him with a little bit of step-by-step instruction for the piano that he could take home with him so that he could have that instead of having the music in front of him. He would have that audio video program that he was able to do. So he learned to do the piano. So we've gone from I've seen him for about 4 months now, and we see each other every week. And he went from not being able to move one finger at a time on the keys, not that they were physically disabled, but his brain could not figure out how to make his hands listen to his brain. And so there was a disconnect there somehow. So when we use the music as a tool, he was able to do a 5-note scale. And then he discovered the song For Elise by Beethoven. I'm sure you are familiar with it. It's the proverbial,
yes, when you heard it. I love that song. I'm talking
about. Yeah. He is now able to play almost the whole song.
Because, oh, wow. And how old is he?
11.
That's very impressive.
Isn't it though? And he all there's the brain wants to compensate. So it was looking for a reason. He's a very intelligent kid. And so he also discovered he's left-handed. No one has ever thought to put a pencil in his left hand. They were constantly putting it in his right hand. And I allowed him, I said, well, let's use your left hand here. He goes, that's so much easier than the right hand. How come the left hand is so much easier? I said, I don't know. I said, have you ever tried to write with your left hand? No. I said, well, why don't you try? And so now he can write his name. He's able to write his papers. He's able to do his thing because he's left-handed. No one ever told him that.
That's so cool. I love that.
He was able to find compensation. So he was able to really become alert. His mom says now he is self-recreating 30 to 40 minutes at a time without her having to interact with him or help him. He's able to do it by himself. And he loves it. He is so thrilled and happy to have an outlet that he can do this on. And now he's learning the trombone. Because now he learned he didn't have to read the notes on the page in order to be able to play. And so, and he's also learning the ukulele now, and he just absolutely loves it. And so now it has become a creative outlet for him, and it's allowed his brain to compensate. I mean, there are so many, many other examples. I have a lady that has advanced dementia. She is in the hospice program, and she is nonverbal. And my very first session with her, we went to the piano and I started to sing a little Christmas song and she started to sing. And she has a beautiful singing voice and she sang all of the words and her daughter sobbed. She hasn't heard her mother sing in so long. It was amazing to see. And then all of a sudden she's alert. She noticed her daughter there and she said, well, hello, when did you get here? And how long have you been here? And the daughter bawled. She couldn't stop crying. Mom, I can't believe that you're talking to me. So these are that's the power of music and having a therapist that has the skills to manipulate the music in the situation that is appropriate is amazing. Now you can also go the other way where their music can be detrimental to a person. So it's very, you know, we have to use it with caution. Most people think, oh yeah, it's just music. No. It's not just music. So, there, you know, I'm sure you can think of a genre of music. You go, ugh, I'm not doing that. No. No.
I have a friend of mine who will not. I can definitely think of a few. So I'm curious, what are the differences between the neural music that helps people and the detrimental music? Would you say it's the structure?
The structure, or there are also frequencies that can be chaotic. Music is the sound waves are set up on hertz. So when you have, it's hertz. So the frequency of the music, I could go into great detail, but I don't know if we have time for that. Throughout history in Western music, we tune the note, the A note to the 440 hertz, which is four clicks low. So it needs to be just a little bit higher in its pitch to be 444 instead in order to be truly therapeutic. It's interesting. The 440 is just a little bit off and it makes it just a little bit chaotic. And so it's not that it's wrong or bad. It's just not as therapeutic. Back in the Gregorian era, I don't know if you remember or have any familiarity with the Gregorian chants, and back when Pope Gregory was a thing and back centuries ago, they used the chants to heal people because they used the right frequencies and they understood what that meant. And Pope Gregory decided that was way too holy and we needed to stop that. And so he put all of those chants up into the Vatican and locked them up and didn't allow the public to have access to that because that was just too holy. And so the music started to change after that. And it's been very interesting when you examine the history of what happened in those years. So it's very therapeutic depending on what you do. And I know that when I'm driving along, I don't know if you've ever had this happen, but when you get to a stop sign, and you hear the thump, 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 thump in the car next to you. You ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that multiple times.
Maybe that's you. Maybe you're the one in the car next to me.
I don't think so. Maybe we'll see.
But then when you listen to the lyrics, it's usually derogatory. It's usually hate-filled. It's usually chaotic. That type of, that style of music, as if you want to call it that, people say, oh, yeah, there's nothing but noise. Well, it resonates with some people who are hurting because all they can think of is their pain. And so when they're listening to that hatred music, they think that they're feeling better because then that other person that they're singing about is feeling worse than they are. So then, of course, then you focus on that, and then you have your reticular activating system, which is a thing that happens when you focus on something. For the a simple example of that is if you wanted to buy, say, you wanted to buy a red Toyota, and you hadn't seen a red Toyota ever. Well, you started to look in the catalog, and you found a red Toyota, and by golly, all of a sudden, there are 50 million red Toyotas. What in the world? Where did they come from? But that's your reticular activating system. Another example of that is you're in a busy room and you can barely hear each other talk, but somebody yells your name from across the room and you hear it and you focus it. And you go, who said that? Who said that? And you look across the room and there it is. And there's that person. But it's still, the room is just as noisy. But that reticular activating system keeps you alive and it keeps you focused. And it's important. So when you use music that is hate-filled and derogatory, it becomes what you focus on because your brain is grabbing onto that as a life ring. And this is what we must be thinking about now. This is what we must be focusing on. This is what we must be looking for. Well, if you're thinking about hatred and anger and frustration all the time, what are you going to see? Of course you're going to see that. You won't see the positive, the good, the right, the upright. You won't see that because you're busy listening to the head banging, you know, I'm going to do drugs and see how fast I can have sex with however better I want to have sex with. You know, I mean, I have sessions with some kids that are in a juvenile detention center, and I asked them to give me titles of songs that they like. And I told them I would screen them before we'd use them. And I was shocked at the lyrics. I was shocked at the style of music that they know all the words to. And they sing it at the top of their lungs. And we wonder why we have trouble in our culture. It's just, it's amazing to me. So music can be, because the brain uses it as a therapeutic tool. The brain will grab onto music first because it's easy. And the entire brain activates. The brain says, this is a good thing. I can see myself now. Let's do this. And it grabs it. So there are some people that when they're doing any kind of work, that if they have to have focus and they struggle with focus, there are some people that have to have the room absolutely silent. Because if they have any kind of music going on or any kind of noise at all of any kind in the room, they cannot focus. Then there are some people that have to have something going on in the room or they can't focus. They have to have something happening. And so those are the people that go to the library because they have to have activity going on around them so they can focus. It's interesting. Everybody is unique. Everybody has their own way of doing things. So it's been very, very interesting to study the individuals and people, how they go through. And that's the importance of having a music therapist when you're working through troubles, because the music therapist then can help guide you. To become a music therapist, a person needs to have a 5-year degree in college and 6 months of full-time internship under a board-certified therapist. And then we pass a board certification exam that is a national exam. So it's a 6-hour exam. So it is a very, very rigorous training program. And there are many that go back for a master's degree and doctorates in music therapy. And you know, have neural people. Some people call themselves neural music therapists, and there are different groups of study for the different advanced degrees, of course, as there are with any occupation. So it's interesting.
Wow, Sheila, that's amazing. You know, it's only been like 20 minutes, and I've already learned so much. And this is, you know, it's opened my eyes to so many things, and I. I think the music there, because I didn't know a lot about it before, but you know, I've learned so much, you know, just what you're talking about with the different groups of people who focus. That's something I've noticed in myself, is that, you know, I need something going on in the background, like a TV show just for noise, so I can kind of focus on my work. And it's been interesting because people are always saying, you know, how can you focus with that stuff going on in the background? And I just think it's really cool. And, you know, that just kind of clicked in my mind now that you brought that up. Like sometimes I'll also listen to music.
For you, I would recommend that you be mindful of what you have in the background, especially if you're working so much on personal development and you're working people through that stuff. Be mindful of what you put on there, not just noise.
What would you recommend?
Well, if you think through, you know, instrumental things, or there are therapeutic music tools that you can use. I would go through your YouTubes and see if there's I just love YouTube. It's my best friend. I go on in and say, if you're really looking for excitement, exciting music, I would do just for giggles, just to see what it does. Mm-hmm. And just be mindful, think it through. And so that you don't have just random whatever, you know, because if you have, for example, you put the television program on, who knows what they're going to say? Who knows what the garbage they're putting into your brain? Your brain can't unhear that. Once you hear it, it's there, even if it's in the background. And if you have news talk on, for example, and their goal is to get you to listen. In order to get you to listen, they have to be something that's frightening. Your brain has to pay attention to something that's dangerous. And so the millions of people that are doing amazing, wonderful things get no airtime because it's not scary.
Yeah, I can't stand the news. I never listen or watch the news. The song I usually listen to, I have a couple that I rotate through, but it's Canon and D by Pockbill.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's one of my, like, sometimes I would put that, like, they have these hour playlists of the same song, like, I would do that. So I don't know if that's a good thing to do. I don't know if it's better have variety. what do you think?
Whatever works that you know, and it could be that it's organized. So you know the chord progression. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, you know, the bass is the organized part of it. So you hear the bass, you know, the progression on that, and you can hum it to yourself. And your brain is able to grab onto that and move it forward. I do the same thing. I have, my favorite group is the Piano Guys. It's instrumental, and they occasionally have a guest artist, but they're with the piano and the cello. And the things with the percussive stuff that they do and whatever, it's, to me, their music is very organized and it's very positive and uplifting to me. Now there are some people that say, oh, that, you know, and my husband is a country music fan. Oh, dear God.
I'm sorry.
I know, he's the old school. He likes the Hank Williams version, even not Hank Williams Jr. Hank Williams country music. And when he plays it on the car radio, I said, you know, I think we've listened to the same song for the last 4 hours. And they're different. They have different titles, I think.
They all sound the same to me.
The same four chords and the same slow music. I don't know. People there, and like I said, but he just loves it. It speaks to his heart, and that's just fine. It's all good. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me, but it's just funny. I have a friend who is a jazz musician, and I was helping her write her bio, and I said, well, she can sing every kind of music and blah, 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 including country music. She goes, I would never sing country music on purpose.
I wouldn't either.
I said, yeah, but you could. I know I could, but I won't.
By accident, maybe.
But there are people, like I said, that they absolutely love it. Your Cheatin' Heart is one of the favorites that I know that I get requested everywhere I go. Why? I don't know. They know the words. I don't know. John Denver was a crossover. And so, you know, his music, a lot of people will know too, you know. Almost Heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. You know, that was a crossover country song. And that was back in the 70s when the genres were starting to be blended. They weren't specifically one type or another. Some artists did a really nice job doing a crossover. So it's kind of fun when you get to understand those things. But popular song isn't always the only kind of music out there either, which is interesting.
I certainly agree. So, Sheila, are there any other, you know, specific types of music you would recommend people to stay away from?
Well, I think for me, the grunge, the really dark rap. There are rap artists out there that are amazing, that do a beautiful job with the lyrics, and they work very hard to make sure that what they're doing is positive, and thought filled, and they're great rap artists. So the style of music to me, it really is very. I have to be very cautious about that. I really don't like the dark grunge. Now, if you use it as a, here's where you are. There's a thing called, my brain just went dead. The ISO principle. The ISO principle takes a person, it's a music therapy term. It takes a person from where they are to where you want them to go therapeutically. So if a person is in a really, really dark place, we would start with the dark music. And then we would move them toward the light with different styles of music and move them forward from there. Or if they're really hyperactive, you'd get a really hyper, hyper, hyper song and you start to slow the rhythm down. And the brain grabs a hold of it and helps them slow down. And then they become to the place where they can relax or quiet down. Or if they're really quiet and they need to activate, I don't know about you, but when I want to clean my house, I do not put on slow, quiet, sleepy music. Nope.
I don't either.
Pandora has a thing called Christmas cleaning. I couldn't believe it. I said, Christmas cleaning? You've got to be kidding me. So I turned on the station just for giggles, just to see what it was. And it was, honest to goodness, it was the best music ever. I was skipping around.
I'll have to try that next time I need to do some cleaning. Or give me some motivation.
So it the ISO principle, again, is takes you from where you are to where you want to go. So if you need to concentrate and your brain is chaotic, you could start with the chaotic music a little bit just to get your brain's attention and then move it into something that's less chaotic. Or just, you know, be alerted to the fact that that's what needs to happen. So it's, again, it's being mindful. Most people can be mindful about these things and do it themselves. If they know what they're looking for and how to work it through. So it's a matter of teaching people how to do that.
Okay, so is it pronounced the ISO principle?
ISO principle is what it's called. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I just wrote that down.
It's spelled ISO principle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so I think that's so cool. I never thought of that, but I'm definitely going to try that because, you know, every now and then. Well, sometimes I'll find myself in these moods where I don't have a lot of energy. And, you know, I'm not usually like that, but it's just hard to get work done. Is that something you think would work for that?
Sure. Absolutely. You would start out with the smooth, just not real rhythmic music and listen to a whole song of it and just allow yourself to feel that way. Give yourself permission to, you know what, I'm having a day. I need to just sit here and feel that way. And you take, and when you finish the song, you go, oh, thank you. And then pick it up a little bit. And the next one, and then the next tune you listen to, it would be just a little bit better, a little bit more rhythm, depending on what you want to do. And then move forward from there. So it'd be mindful of you could, if you get your library picked out, you would know. I mean, it takes some time to figure that stuff out. What music, you know, you can't just off the top of your head just pick something unless you have, you know, your personal protocol. I know that when I'm down like that, when I have some really, I just can't get up and motivated in order to be able to personally, you know, allow myself to feel that way, I will go to the music that makes me cry sometimes. For example, I just, you know that there are certain songs that I play that just, I just, it deeply moves me. And I allow that to happen and spend a few minutes. And then when the song is done, I breathe in and breathe out, wash my face, and then I go on to the next thing. And then by the end of my, it takes me about a half an hour when I get through that process. personally. And so it's then I'm all better and life is good and I can get on with life. And so it depends on what happens, you know, but my life is so filled with trauma and tragedy because of the type of people I serve. There are times when I just have to allow myself to feel that. So, and as a therapist, I have to be detached and I'm supposed to be separated from that, but there are times when I can't. There was one night I had a session with the girls at the juvenile center. And they're 11 to 13 year olds. And I said, you know, I said, so what happens after this when you're done here? And not a single one knew where they were going to go, who they're going to be with. Are they going home? They didn't know. They didn't know if they're going to live with family. They didn't know if they're going to live with a foster family. They didn't know if they were going to even be able to get out. They had no idea. Not a single one knew. Not a single one had a plan. And I was devastated by that. I thought, what in the world is the matter with this system that they don't know? Could be they just weren't told. It could be they weren't understanding what they were supposed to be doing. But they don't know because they don't know. And it's just, it was devastating to me. I went home that night and I was arguing with myself, you know, don't be upset by this, you know, whatever. But then I said, you know what, I've got to allow myself to feel that because that hurts hearing about that. And so you just don't know. And so you to give yourself permission to go ahead and feel what you're going to feel, because emotions are what they are. They aren't good or bad. Emotions just are. And emotions aren't a dictator of who we are as human beings. They're a piece of what we are. They're emotions are given to us so we can have compassion for one another. We can have awareness of one another, that we are able to, because we are herd animals, H-E-R-D, herd animals. We are people that people need to be social. They need to be together. We are designed to be with each other. Yes, there are introverts and whatever, but they know that they need to be around people sometimes in order to be able to survive. We can't survive alone, typically.
Well, so, Sheila, that's amazing. You've been through so much, and you have so much experience with music therapy. And I'm curious, you've been in there for a long time, and with all this knowledge that you've accumulated over the years, what initially drew you into music therapy?
When I was... my mother was killed in a car accident. My father was killed in a car accident when I was a tiny, tiny, tiny kid. My mother was a music teacher. And she died when I was 18 of a heart attack. And so I thought, well, I guess I need to go into music education. So I went to school for a year and hated that. I wound up getting married and moving to Eau Claire. And I didn't want to live in Eau Claire. I told myself I would never live in Eau Claire because I grew up 35 miles from here. But I've been here since 1982. Well, that didn't work. Anyway, when I went to Eau Claire, the University of Eau Claire, I took a class in music education. And I thought, I just really don't like this. And I walked up the hall and I looked at the end of the hall and there's a thing called music therapy on the wall. And I thought, music therapy, what the heck? So I went in and I talked to the teacher and I said, what's this music therapy thing? And he told me about it and I said, hey, that sounds like something I could do. So he said, well, here we go. And he sat me down and we talked about it and we worked out a plan. And I discovered, I took classical piano lessons for years and I hated it. And I found out that I could do what they call functional piano, which is you take a lead sheet, which is seeing the melody and then the chords. And you play the chords, you play the accompaniment to the melody without having to play all the notes on the page. And I do really well playing by ear. And I didn't know that that was okay to do. And I discovered that when I started doing music therapy. And I just absolutely, it freed me. It opened up the whole universe to me. I absolutely love playing now. And so I've been playing piano for years and years and years and just loving it now. I hated it for the first 10 years of my life, or 15 years of my life, when I was taking piano lessons, because I absolutely hated doing it that way, with the classical stuff. Now, there are people out there that have to have all of the notes and play the notes that are on the page, or they can't play. There are people like that out there. Everybody is different. I am not one of those. So I am not a virtuoso. I am not a performance person. I'm a therapist. So I use the music as a tool. So that's why music is so, the performance aspect of it was, I thought there's no way I can be a music teacher because I'm not a performer. And so when I became a therapist, I thought, this is so me. I wanted to be a psychologist growing up. And I thought, well, what I'm going to be, how can I be a psychologist? Because my mom said, well, you got to deal with all those crazy people. Why would you want to do that? Well, I do. I like dealing with all those crazy people because I'm one of them. So I just really, really, it was such a good marriage of the of my skill set that I just really, really enjoyed it. And at the time, the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire had the number three university in the country of music therapy programs. It had just built its own state-of-the-art clinic with reel-to-reel and recording equipment on cassette. What? And
what is that?
Closed circuit television. That was so advanced and innovative.
How things have changed.
It was amazing. And they had a floating floor in the clinic that, you know, so when you lay on the floor, you could feel the vibrations through the floor. And so it was helpful even for the hearing impaired and whatever. So it was just, it was an amazing experience. And I got my degree in 1986. And in 1990, the American Music Therapy Association was born from, there were three different associations of music therapy throughout the nation. And they said, we got to get together here and be unified. So they created American Music Therapy Association, and they created the board certification examination process. And I got that I became board certified in 1990. So I was one of the first few people to sit for that exam. It was, and so it's been in over the last 30 years or so, music therapy has gone from being a voodoo, you know, people go, what? That is, you know, that they used to tell us that, you know, that's not a valid therapeutic process. And now it's become mainstream. It's become the hospice program that I work with. They have a music therapy position that they use. And so there are many, many more jobs now for music therapists as music therapists because they understand the value. People finally understand, and because of the research and because of the tools that are able to use in the United Kingdom, many of the nursing homes there, the MedPass consists of giving the MP3 players with their headphones with their prescribed music on them for each person. And they put their music on, and they're able to then have their food, feed themselves. They're able to do their own cares, many of them. They're able to do more for themselves than they could without that tool. And they've dramatically decreased the medications they're giving to those people now. And so it's been very interesting. It's been slow in coming in the United States. But there's a thing called music and memory that is becoming more of a thing in the nursing homes. Assisted livings don't have that that program as readily, but it's been interesting to see how music has become becoming more mainstream as a therapeutic tool. So it's been very exciting to see the process.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. It sounds like we're making huge strides in the field, and especially in the United States. But, you know, we definitely have room to improve because it sounds, I think it's a much better alternative to using medication because, you know, it's something natural and, you know, it relies on the kind of the way that the brain structures and communicates with itself. So,
and there are no side effects.
Yeah, exactly. And to the listeners out there, I hope that you guys are enjoying the episode as much as I am so far. I'm learning a ton. I've taken a ton of notes on my page right now, and I can't wait for the second half of the show. But on that note, I think this is a good time for a very quick commercial break. So we'll be back in just a few seconds with the Da Vinci Mindset Podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to the Da Vinci Mindset Podcast. We've had an amazing episode so far with Sheila Wall. We've been talking about music therapy, the benefits, what exactly it is, and I gotta say, I'm amazed at what I've heard so far. So if the first half was good, just think about how good the second half is gonna be. So in this half, We're gonna deviate a little bit. Maybe we'll still throw in some music therapy here and there. We're gonna focus a little more on self-development. So Sheila, why don't we just dive right in? Welcome back. And I want to ask you, how has self-development impacted your life?
It has been, how do you answer that? That is, wow.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. I spent the first 35 years of my life or so just kind of bumbling through and not understanding what it meant to become better. Through a series of events, I wound up in marriage counseling, and I wound up having to go through some regular counseling because of some trauma that I experienced as a small child. And I discovered through my network marketing company that I belong to, the industry of personal development and or self-development semantics. And I think that I found out that I have to work on me. What? Really? What does that mean? So one of the things that Jim Rohn always says is, you know, don't wish that the situation were better. Wish that you were better. Change you and the world changes. And I, that's my first introduction to personal development was through the works of Jim Rohn. And also then I did, Tony Robbins. We went to his Release the Power Within, which is where you walk on fire or your coals, you know, burning coals. Have you been through his training on that?
I have not been through it, but I have heard of it. I do want to go one day though.
Be a firewalker? Oh my gosh. That seminar, I tell you what, that seminar changed my life. It was a weekend. I had fractured my foot like the week before going to that. And I we spent so much money to go to that. And I said, you know, honey, we're going to go. I just won't walk on the coals. That's fine. I'll just do everything else. But, and I had my splint on, you know, and I was so upset because I had to hobble around. So we went through that whole thing and he talked about the mindset and talked about, you know, your brain and how it works and what it does and how you can focus and how, you know, you can transform your life by what you focus on. And I thought, well, okay, whatever. Well, as we got to the point where we were going to walk on the coals, I said, you know, I took off my splint. I thought, the worst comes to worst, whatever. They have, it's a very short walk from one point to the other. They have people on both sides and, you know, you can't get hurt. You just can't. Well, you can, but they have ways to prevent it. And if you do what they tell you, you should be okay. Well, I was going to hobble. I thought, well, I'll hobble. That's fine. By the time I got across the other side, there was a burning in the one spot on my foot where I broke my foot. And it healed it. My foot was completely healed. I didn't have to wear my splint the rest of the weekend. The pain was gone. The swelling went away. It was crazy. I thought, there's something to this. And that was about 10 or 11 years ago that happened. Or 12 maybe. Maybe it's been longer than that. I don't know. But it's been a long, long time. And I thought, you know, in order for me to be the best person I can be, it's the whole proverbial thing of putting your own oxygen mask on first. If you become better and you stay healthy, then you can help everyone. You can help people around you. If you don't pay attention to yourself, you don't pay attention to your diet, you don't pay attention to your brain, you don't pay attention to yourself at all, and you just abuse yourself, you can't help anyone. You can't do anything. You wind up in a hole. And in order to help another person out of the hole, you have to stay founded and hang on to your grounding and don't jump in the hole with them. It's interesting. People just don't get that. They become, and the other thing that I discovered was I was hanging around people that really were not such a good idea. The other thing I learned from Jim Rohn and some other wonderful, Darren Hardy and many of these other guys that are out there, Brandon Burchard, those guys, they talk about you become like the five closest people to you. And I was looking around at the five closest people to me and I went, maybe that's not such a good idea. And have you ever heard the term the crab trap story?
I don't think so. No.
This is my favorite story ever. Is the there's a breed of crab that can get out of anything you put them in. They can get out of any cage. They can. They're escape artists. This crab. They can.
That's awesome.
It is. And but they have one human characteristic that we all as humans have, and that is their need to be what the other person has. So they think they should have what the other crab has. So what they'll do is they'll put food in the bottom of a crab trap, and one crab will jump in and start to eat. The next crab sees him and says, "Paw, you got something I want." So they jump in and they start eating the food. And then the next one comes in and starts to eat the food. Pretty soon the food's gone. So the first one says, "Well, food's gone. I'm gone now." So he starts to climb out. The other crabs go, "Oh, no, you don't. No, 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 no." They grab him and bring him back down. And then he tries again, and they grab him and bring him back down. And he tries again, and they break his claws. He tries again, and they kill him. And they stay in the crab trap. And they catch thousands of crabs that way. Now, people are no different than that. You can get stuck in surrounded by people that are negative, that are self-degrading, I know you've been around people like this too, that want you to feel bad. And so in order for you to feel bad, they have to, or for themselves to feel better, they have to try to make you feel bad. So they want very badly to step all over you so that they can feel better. I know that you've heard about people that, you know, that you've had bad bosses in your life where that boss will single you out. And if you're doing well, they don't want you to do well. So they're going to step on you. Now, it's not, I haven't worked in an environment like that for a very long time, but I did when I was in college. I was a waitress, and we had a terrible waitress trainer. She was terrible. She was so negative and so derogatory. I didn't understand at the time what she was doing to all of us. But it didn't take very long, and that restaurant went out of business. They did not see what she was doing to the business because of her negativity. So it's been very, very interesting to try to work past all of that and to understand that the garbage you put in your mind, your brain is a computer. It just is. It's a blank slate. So it will produce what you put in it. So if you put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. If you're going to put good stuff in, you get good stuff out. Your brain does what you program it to do. It's just how it is. And so people that have the mental illness things and all that, of course, you know, you have some exceptions to those things where sometimes the brain will misfire. The brain will have its troubles. The trauma will cause problems, and there will be brain injuries and those kinds of things. I'm not talking about those kinds of folks. Those folks are in a different category unto themselves. We have many, many issues with that, and there's medications that cause problems for people's brains. But by and large, the person that is without all of those circumstances, most of us have the brain that allows us to program it. We program our brain to do what we want it to do. And that's the whole point behind self-development or personal development, is to program your brain to make it do what you want it to do. Because we're intelligent human beings. Most of us are. And there are some people you say, well, holy cow. I just smile and nod at those that refuse to believe that. I had one lady that I was seeing in a session. It was not music therapy. It was a therapeutic session. She's a good friend of mine. I wasn't being her quote-unquote therapist. I was being her friend. We were having coffee. And she started talking, and I said, "How do you talk to yourself when you're standing naked and alone in your bedroom by yourself? What do you say to yourself?" And she started to cry. I said, "That bad? Would you say the stuff that you say to yourself to your daughter?" No. Oh, no, no, no. Would you say that to your mother? Would you say that to your son? Would you say it to your husband? Then why the heck are you saying it to yourself? Why are you calling yourself those names? Why are you doing that to yourself? We are so good at finding fault in ourselves. We are our own worst enemies when it comes to that. Depending on how we were raised, of course. If you were raised in a house where you had a critical parent or critical parents or critical siblings or people that were negative and derogatory to you growing up, it's incredible what you have to get over. I know that we are, as human beings, we have our personalities are formed by the time we're about 6 or 7 years old. We get the most of our personalities between the ages of 3 and 5. And that's where most of it comes from. The Bible talks about, you know, teach a child when they're small in the ways in which they must grow, because when they're old, they will not depart from them. And that is truth. I know that I know, thinking about myself, I still have to fight the things that were told to me when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, 7 years old. This woman, when we were talking, she went back to her fifth grade teacher, and she's my age. I said, you went back to, when we finished talking, I said, you went back to fifth grade, fourth grade. You're still carrying that? So people do that. You don't realize it. It sits there. It sits there bugging you in the back of your mind. And it's a recording that murmurs in the background. And unless you're mindful of it and mindful to turn it off, it's troublesome because you can't not hear it. You don't unhear things. You can't, unless you have a memory impairing condition, you don't forget stuff. It's there. It's in your brain forever. So if you look at terrible stuff, if you put terrible stuff in, you're going to remember the terrible stuff. Pornography is the biggest key of that, the biggest showing of that. It's a sensational thing. It feeds the dopamine in the brain. And pornography that you can see, you can't unsee that. I don't know about you, but there have been things that I go, oh, man, how can I unsee that? Man. You know what I'm saying? You get done and you go, whoa, I didn't want to see that. No. And then it's etched in your mind. There it is. Because it's all there. Your mind is a computer. It has the data storage banks. I always tell people your secretary is the most important piece of your mind. And with a person that has advanced dementia, their secretary is on vacation. So the new information coming in does not stick. The secretary isn't there. So it goes right straight to the garbage can. It goes in and out. You don't get it. It doesn't stay. It's not there. But if you were to talk to them about what happened when they were small, then the secretary goes, oh, wait a minute. I know where that is. And they can go back and pick up the memory in the back of the mind, and the librarian type kid will bring it forward to the front and say, here, you can remember this. But the new stuff?
Yeah.
Nope. That's in the memory impairing conditions, the Alzheimer's dementias and the Parkinson's have dementia piece and all of that. I spent 20 years working with people that had memory impairing conditions. It's been interesting to see how that helps to work through those processes with people. It's been really, really, really interesting to see.
Yeah, Sheila, I love hearing about your experiences and all the knowledge that you've accumulated over your career. And I think it's fantastic. And I want to ask you a specific question. So let's say that we have someone out there and the way that they speak to themselves, the way they see themselves, you know, it's in the negative light. Like in the story with your friend who, you know, she stands there and, you know, she thinks of herself negatively. Let's say we have someone in this situation, but they realize that they want to get started moving in a positive direction with personal development. What would you recommend them to do to get started so that they're moving in a positive direction?
Start saying thank you for. Thank you for. And think of one thing that they're thankful for. And it can be small, depending on where they're at in the process. There are some people that have already started this process, but if they're truly in a hole and they don't know, they can't even see the light of day. the people that are just, that are sitting in the corner crying their eyes out because they don't know which direction to go. Start to say thank you for something simple, like a pencil. I heard a story once where he started saying that was, he was homeless and had lost everything, and his family didn't want to talk to him. He had nothing. And he was told to start saying thank you for. And he said, he looked at the, they said, here, take this pencil. And he goes, that's just a pencil. And he said, well, thank you for the pencil. Why would you be thankful for a pencil? Well, I don't know. Well, you know, you can start, you could write your name. Well, then you can write down some things if you think they're important, or a grocery list, or you can, this pretty incredible thing, this thing with this lead in the middle and the wood thing on the side. And, oh, you know what? I can erase and start over if I want. That's something to be thinking. Wow. And he started thinking about the pencil. Now, does it change the life? No. But the gratitude, learning how to be grateful for, that's what we start with. To say just a simple, something simple, because there are people that you cannot get them to say thank you. I don't know about you, but have you ever met anybody like that?
Yeah, I've met a couple people like that who fall into that category.
And then you say, you know, they expect whatever, and you have better, or else, and they never once say thank you. You know how dark that person is? Oh my gosh, it breaks my heart when people are like that. So you don't get very far in life without being grateful. And that's the easiest thing to change. Because once you start being thankful, it starts to spill over. And pretty soon you're thankful for a lot of things. Pretty soon you can start to see, oh, well, I'm thankful that my car started today. I'm thankful that, you know, I got to point B because I really shouldn't have today. I'm thankful that I had food to eat today. I'm thankful that I got out of bed this morning. I'm thankful that I'm able to open my eyes, or I'm thankful that I could move my head. I'm thankful that my fingernails are not dirty. I mean, you know, you can think of all sorts of different little things to be thankful for. And pretty soon your list starts to build. I try not to go to sleep at night without being thankful for at least 5 or 6 things that I was not thankful for yet this week. So I make a list of a new thing to be thankful for every day. And it's been interesting because there are times when it's tough. Because it's like, oh, that was already on my list, really? 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 But it gets better. It gets better. I work very, very hard to bring value to every situation and be thankful for people that I'm with, to be thankful for the things that I'm doing. And it's not always easy. Actually, it's really not easy a lot of times. But it makes all the difference in the world.
Thank you, Sheila. I can definitely agree with you in saying that gratitude has been one of the most, you know, powerful changes that I've made in my life over the past few months. And I want to ask you, let's say that, you know, this person reaches a state of, after a couple months, you know, they're in the state of, you know, kind of constant gratitude and expressing thankfulness. What are some things that they could possibly start to do next? What are some opportunities, some avenues that they could go down?
When they're, as a person is becoming thankful, then how can you make it better for someone else? So then you pick a person or two people or the next person or whatever, or a situation to bring value, to make it better, so that you can find ways to make it better for the next person. Try and help people out. Try to do something nice for someone, like random acts of kindness, to be kind to others and to be thoughtful, and not always talk about yourself. So be thinking about the other person. That to think outside oneself is a huge deal too. That helps. So then as you start to think about the other people and you're grateful and you're thinking about other people, then once you start doing that, the focus comes off of yourself and your reticular activating system starts to look to other people. And so then it comes off of your personal pain. It comes off of your personal struggles, And it comes, the focus comes off of those things and on to the next person. And it takes a lot of work to do that. But then once you do that and you're able to focus on other people for a while, then you come back to yourself and say, okay, now, what brought me to that spot? How did I get there? And objectively look at yourself. There's a self-healing kind of process I went through about, you know, speaking to the little one in your mind, you know, your child center person that you have in your own heart and mind. And you say, you know, thank you for being there for me. Thank you for the stuff you've done for me. And look at the situation that child is in. And especially if you had trauma as a little kid, that's where a lot of people's pain is coming from. There was trauma as something happened to them as a child that they carried with them into adulthood. And that's a whole nother gamut down which we could travel, and it's a lot more than we can talk about here. But walking through allowing that inner child, your I call it I call her the little one, my little one, my little Sheila, your little Kenny. and look inside and look at that as the adult standing next to yourself as the child and walking your child through that pain as an adult and thanking that child for surviving the pain and surviving the situations that the child survived. I had sexual abuse as a little kid. And so, and it wasn't from a family member, it was from a neighbor. And he was a pedophile in the neighborhood. And in 1965, no one talked about that stuff. He was abusing several girls in the neighborhood that I didn't know about. And I thought it was normal because I was a little kid. I didn't know. And my mother didn't know. And again, she was a single mom. And so she was trying to raise three of us and she didn't know. And then 1965, they didn't talk about that stuff. 1966, that just wasn't talked about. And so I had to work through that healing process of how do I talk to my little one and how do I allow her to heal? And she was, and the stuff that I went through to try to get past that. And I come through the alcoholism phase. I was an alcoholic by the time I was 12. And so, I mean, I spent a lot of years trying to compensate in bad ways and didn't understand the magnitude of the mind and how the mind will help you fix that. And so it's been a quite a journey to get to where I am today. And it's an amazing thing to learn how to control your mind, because your mind is your biggest, it can be your biggest enemy or it can be your best friend. It's all in how you think about it and how you program it. And to understand that your brain is a computer. It is not your guide. Your brain is a computer. Your personality comes from your mind, of course. And we all talk about, you know, you have your emotions and you have all those other things that make us human beings. So we have the spiritual aspect of ourselves too, which is a whole different conversation for another day. But to understand how to program the brain is the biggest tool a person can do for themselves, because you don't have to think that way. You don't have to think like that. No one told you have to think like that. You're thinking like that because you didn't understand you don't have to. You can change it. You have to change it. And it's a purposeful thing. It's like anything else you do. If you want to change your diet, you can't just, if you're 100 pounds overweight, you didn't get there overnight. You have to change the process. And you go a bit at a time. My oldest daughter just lost, over the last 3 years, she has lost 75 pounds by being mindful of her diet and mindful of her activity. She's got an app on her phone that has some fitness whatever, and she has a habitua or whatever they call it. I don't know. She has because she is of that generation. She's 31. So she understands how to use those tools. And she has learned how to be self-disciplined that way. But it didn't happen overnight. And these changes take time. And so in today's culture where we are an instant society, let's put everything in a microwave and get it done today, this instant, right now, take a pill, do whatever you have to do to not have to do any work, to do whatever. If somebody tells you you don't have to work at it, they're lying to you and they're trying to sell you something. So
thank you for sharing. I think that's, you know, that's a good point. Everyone wants everything instantly, but you know, good things, they come to those who wait and have patience. You know, it takes persistence and then
work.
Yeah, it's exactly. Work.
And that's a swear word to a lot of people. The four letter word, you know, starts with a W. Work. It's been a lot for me. It's been a long journey, and it's been very, very difficult. But it's so very worth it. Oh my goodness, it's so worth it. Every day I spend between an hour, 45 minutes to an hour minimum every day in personal development, whether I'm listening to podcasts, whether I'm listening to I get a Darren Daly, it's called. He sends out a free whatever the deal is, and it's a wonderful encouragement and business development tools and whatever the deal is. And or you know, I listen to the podcast from Brandon Burchard, or I listen to, well, now that I know about you, of course, I'm going to be tuning into that too.
Thank you.
I didn't know about you. I didn't know you existed until you connected with me, which I really appreciate. So
yeah, no problem.
I love doing that stuff. And I spent, and I have a lot, because of my job as an insurance agent too, I have a lot of windshield time. So I have audible.com is my best friend. And so I have audiobooks that I listen to all the time, and I listen and I fill my mind with positive. I fill my mind with solutions. I fill my mind with peace. I fill my mind with excitement, with good, with gratitude. And I have decided that that's the only way to live. If you live any other way, you wind up in a hole. And I don't want to be in a hole anymore. I spent too many years in a hole. I'm not doing it anymore. So
thank
it's a decision.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't think anyone would want to be in a hole, but you know, some people, they get stuck there. And I'm curious, if you had to pick just one thing, what would you say is the most important lesson that you've learned?
Love myself. Fall in love with me. If I am in deep, and if I really love me, really, really, really love me. It took me 45 years to look in the mirror and say, I love you, and mean it. I couldn't do it before. And now I look in the mirror every morning and I say, you know, I love you. You are my best friend. And that is the biggest key. Because if you would not hurt your best friend purposefully. You would not. If you are truly in love with whatever, you know, spouse, friend, neighbor, whatever, if you're truly in love, you will spend time with that person. You will work to make that person's life easier. And so when you look at yourself and you love yourself, you are careful about what you eat. You are careful about how you treat yourself. You are careful about what you say to yourself. You are careful and mindful what you fill your head with. And when you do that, that love from yourself radiates. It impacts everyone around you. Everyone sees it. And they wonder, what the heck? It's not arrogance. It's not, people don't understand the difference between that. You got to be careful. You're not there. You're not better than anyone else. And you're not arrogant, all about me, talk about me, look at me, look at me, look at me. No, that's not it. You are just deeply in love with yourself. So you take care of yourself. You look after yourself. You sleep right. You eat right. You fill your mind with good things so that you can do the things that you need to do every day and make a change in the world around you. Everyone will be better because of it. Because then you look out for other people, because you love yourself so much, you want to help other people understand that they need to love themselves too. And how can you help other people love themselves? In order to do that, you need to show them how they can and how their life is important too. And how they need to be able to understand how to be thankful and how to be good to themselves and how to program your mind better. It's interesting to go through that. I have my youngest daughter is a meth addict, and she struggles. We got her as a 15-year-old foster daughter, and she's been through hell and back. I mean, if you can think of any kind of abuse a person can go through, that girl went through it. And I don't know how she's still alive, but she's 25 now, and she still fights, and she's still fighting. And we work through this all the time, every day, and it's a heartbreak for me. I work very hard to show her that she can love herself, and she can't. She looks in the mirror and calls herself every name in the book, and she hates herself. And that is her downfall right there. You hate yourself because of whatever happened or whatever you think that is wrong with you. That self-hatred and self-loathing will destroy you. And it destroys people around you. So that's my thought.
Thank you, Sheila. You know, you've definitely gone through a lot, and I respect you for making it so far through all of this stuff. It sounds like you're doing so much to help other people. And I truly respect you for doing that. And I just want to say thank you for doing all that you're doing.
I'm happy to do it. I'm all about trying to help people's lives be better. And so I really like the name of your podcast. That really is cool.
Thank you.
How did you come up with that? Tell me about that. Tell me, how did you come up with the name?
Well, so one of the things that one of my idols is Leonardo da Vinci, because he was a lifelong learner. He had curiosity, and he didn't accomplish so much because he was a natural born gifted genius. He reached that point because he spent his life learning and enjoying the learning process. And this allowed him and his unique creativity that he developed over time to, you know, really do amazing things in the world. So what my mission is with so I have another company called Da Vinci Mind, where my whole mission is to help people do something similar so they can, you know, reach their full potential for learning and creativity so that they too can do great things over time and, you know, kind of do something similar as to Leonardo da Vinci did. And so a part of that is this podcast that I created. And what I really want people to get into a habit of doing is, you know, personal development, self-development, you know, always improving yourself and your skills, because that's one of the things that made Leonardo da Vinci so great. And I want to, you know, help people to reach that kind of point. And then there are certain things that Leonardo da Vinci did, certain thought patterns that also allowed him to, you know, think more creatively. So I'm trying to put all this together in the podcast. And I think it's so interesting to talk to and meet people like you, Sheila, from all over the world, from different points of life, so that, you know, when people see all these different perspectives, they get to learn, you know, so many amazing things, and it's all just a huge learning experience. So we're kind of all on this journey together. So that's pretty much where it came from. And it's been very cool so far.
Well, this is great. I just looked you up on my device here, and oh my gosh, this is just great.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate that. So I'm curious, yeah. we've been talking about personal development. Are there any specific resources that you would recommend for people out there?
Well, other than your Da Vinci Mindset stuff, this is really cool. What a great thing. I know that I look for people. I know that Dr. Ivan Meisner of BNI, is the king of giver's gain. He hit the BNI, Business Network International, it's called. The goal of that group is to do, refer business back and forth and to give business to other people. And if you give business to everybody in your group, I'm giving business to you, I'm giving business to you. Pretty soon, everybody's giving business back. Everybody's giving business too. So, of course, you're going to get it back. That's just how it is. So I love his podcast and his books that he's written about that. Darren Hardy is one of my very favorite authors. And he is so down to earth as far as, you know, business solutions. And how to be a better person in order to do that. Jim Rohn is another one. And Jim Rohn has passed away a number of years ago, but he was in the 70s. He was doing personal development when personal development, before it was a thing. You know, and Tony Robbins is another one that's classic. And I love Brendan Burchard. He has the personal approach. So, you know, you as a person, what do we do? You know, Darren speaks more to, you know, being, they have a different feel. There are so many different people out there. Let me think, who else? There are going to be people in that space, that niche, that you really resonate with. So I would recommend to people that they try out several different personal development or self-development or, you know, types of, you know, you can go to Google and say personal development or self-development, or, and you can find 80 million hits. or you can go to YouTube and pull up, you know, self-development or personal development or whatever, you know, and you can just write that, you put that down, you got a bazillion hits. And so, you know, but if you find those that you resonate with and then go deep, you don't just, you know, one of the things I learned from Darren Hardy and from Jim Rohn and Brendan and those guys is that if you just scratch the surface, we can get, you can, with Google and YouTube and all those guys out there, I mean, you can know 1,000 things an inch deep. And, but if it, when it really comes to things that matter, you want to go an inch wide and 6 feet deep. So, you know, you want to delve into, if you have one book that you really resonate with and it's really helping you change your life, spend a whole year and really study it and really look at what you can get out of that book. And then, you know, you see Blinkist, you know, this is 15 books a week. Let's listen 15 minutes of the whatever. Yeah, that's the whole thing of where you can be an inch deep, a mile wide. Well, you know, there is some merit to that, sort of, you know, so you know a little bit about a lot of stuff. But really, if you pick a topic or two or three that you want to go deep into and find all the resources you can to go deep into that subject matter and learn what you can about it. Like, for example, with my diseases of the mind and the dementia process and what does that look like? I spent 8 or 9 years studying that. And going deep into the literature on that and the different things that people have done and the studies and whatever, you know, to go deep into those things so that you can really, really specialize and figure out something really cool that you can know a lot about. You know, it's incredible to do that. And on the personal development field is no different. So you find one or two people or three that you really resonate with and go deep into their materials. What are they writing? What have they done? And how did they get there? And what is their life like to get where they're at? Why, how they come into that space? You know, and what makes it really, really interesting to you? So, I mean, the gal that did the, I can't remember her name, I can see her face in my head, and my brain just doesn't want to give me the name. She's the one that taught me about the little one inside. You know, speaking to the little one, and I really love her works. And I have her saved in my Facebook because she does great Facebook Live things. And so I really enjoy her materials. And so to go deep into those types of studies as to how to help people walk through those processes. So yeah, you go deep, find one or two or three people that you resonate with and have materials that you really are learning from and don't feel bad about buying all of their books and reading all of their books and going to their seminars more than once or 3 or 4 times or 12 or 13 times. You know, Darren Hardy went to Jim Rohn's things from the time he was 18 until whatever. And he went to everything he could with Jim Rohn. He sat through the same seminar 6 or 8 or 12 or 14 times. He got different notes every time he went, and he absolutely loved it. Went deep into that, you know, I'm a person of faith, so I go deep into my Bible. I go to my church and I talk to my pastor and I go deep into my faith and spend every day. I spend between 20 minutes and half an hour studying different parts of the scripture that I'm interested in because it means that much to me. And so it's finding stuff that you resonate with. And that you really, really, really want to go, if you really are committed and it really is important to you to become a better person, that's what I would suggest, is to find something that you resonate with.
Thank you, Sheila. I really love that suggestion. What I really resonated with most was, you know, instead of going, you know, doing 60 things an inch deep, you know, just go 1 inch wide and go like a mile deep. That's something that I really think that a lot of people miss out on, you know, especially with the wide availability of information with Google and such things such as that. And, you know, I just actually looked at the time and I realized that we've been in this interview for almost an hour and a half now. And I think that just says something about, you know, what we're talking about, how interesting of a conversation this is. So, you know, I want to start wrapping things up so I don't take up too much of your time today. So one of the things that I do with the Da Vinci Mindset podcast is I typically leave the guests with just a kind of an exit question, just so, you know, kind of, it's sort of a way to wrap things up and just to make sure that the listeners, they take one key piece of information. Now, I'm sure that the people listening to this right now, they're going to get way more than one piece of information, way more than, you know, one technique or idea, because, you know, I've got, you know, a couple pages of notes right here. But anyways, you know, going back to the thought I was about to say, if you could only leave the audience with one piece of actionable advice, what would have to be for you?
Be mindful. Think about things first. Really think it through. What am I putting in my brain? What am I doing? Why am I doing this? Being mindful. That's a huge thing for me. I was the epitome of the party girl. I said, okay, let's go have a good time. I don't know if you remember back in the day with a popular sanguine is what I was called. That's what, when I did my very first personality test, that means that I was the life of the party, but I didn't remember that we had to have coffee. Why don't we have coffee at this party? Well, it's your party and you didn't have it. Oh, oops. You know, but I'm just, you run 100 miles an hour. Have you seen just as an aside, have you seen the YouTube video where the lion is sitting in the foreground and you see this gazelle running at the top speed, and the lion just watches it go by and wham, runs into the tree, bam, down it goes.
I don't think so, but I'm going to have to look it up. It sounds very interesting.
I was the gazelle. Yep. Hit the tree. Bam. Yep. Not looking where I was going. Nope. 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 So, the lion went, okay, lunch. But you know, I have learned over the years to be mindful. So that's what I would leave with the audience. Think it through first. Don't just run through life just randomly without thinking. And don't run into the tree then. You know, if you're mindful, you won't hit the tree.
Try to avoid those trees. But thank you so much for sharing, Sheila. I learned so much in today's interview. I hope that the audience did as well. And I just want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate you reaching out. And I'm looking forward to your podcast. I'm going to be start listening now that I know about you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I appreciate you coming on the show. And, you know, if you have any feedback for my show, how I can improve it, how I can, you know, make the experience better for listeners and guests like you, you know, go ahead and let me know. So Sheila, if any of the listeners out there want to learn more about you or get in contact with you, where could they do so at?
Well, I have a website. It's a preliminary website. I'm working on it and I'm trying to refine it, but it's musictherapist.co. That has all of my contact information on it. They can get my phone number there and everything. So musictherapist.co.
Okay, thank you, Sheila. I'll make sure to put that link in the description as I trip over my words real quickly here. But to the listeners out there, make sure that you check out Sheila's website, musictherapist.co. I'll put the link into the description. And I really hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Da Vinci Mindset podcast. We had an amazing conversation about music therapy, self-development, and so many other things. You know, there's just so much, you know, information that went in my mind. I took so many notes, and I really loved speaking with you today, Sheila. So once again, thank you for coming on the show today. And I think that we could definitely have another episode in the future because, you know, we're already at almost an hour and a half, but I think there's still so much more that we could potentially discuss for the show.
Sure. Well, thank you, Kenny. I appreciate the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And the pleasure is all mine for having you on the show. To the listeners out there, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Da Vinci Mindset podcast. I hope that you guys learned even more than I did today, because that's what it's all about. Your learning, your growth, and your development. So until next time, we'll catch you on the next episode of the Da Vinci Mindset podcast.